That was Days of Wine and Roses with Patti Page.
Is that one of your old records I picked up off the footpath when you had the hard rubbish collection?
It was, but hasn't she got a great voice?
She sings beautifully.
She does. Now, the doyen of food writers, Rita Ehrlich, has been in Western Australia's Swan Valley, where she went to investigate Australia's only patented grape variety, Signy Blanc, which turned up as a seedling of Cabernet in the Mann family's flower garden. The Manns were founders of the Swan Valley winemaking tradition, leading both Houghton's with its famous white Burgundy and the Sandalford Winery. Rita speaks with Dora Mann and his daughter Anthea, both still busy making dry white wine from the unique Australian-developed Cabernet vine.
I'm sitting here in the Swan Valley in a lovely cellar door with a third and fourth generation winemaker. The Mann family are really the first, can be described, I think, as one of the great winemaking families in Australia, and most particularly in the Swan Valley. I'm talking with Doran Mann and his daughter Anthea about a special grape variety and their sparkling wine. A bit of family history. Doran's grandfather George was a winemaker at Houghton's. His father Jack created the white wine that ensured everyone in Australia knew about Western Australian wines. In 1937, he created what was then called Houghton's White Burgundy. Now it's classic white. Doran made wine at Sandalford for many years. He was extraordinarily important in the viticulture of Western Australia. And now they're making he and Anthea are making something very special at a small winery in the Swan Valley, not quite an hour from Perth. And this particular wine has a family history. We've been tasting something called Signy Blanc. Anthea, tell us about the grape variety and how it came about.
Well, it's an amazing story, Rita. Signy Blanc emanated from a seedling vine that came up in the garden, and that's actually what saved it. As you probably know, grapes don't at all breed true to seed, so you have seedling vines that come up in the vineyard all the time, but usually they're so different from the parent vine that they're not worth pursuing. And even if you did want to pursue it, of course, you would have to grow it up, wait till you had enough fruit to make an experimental wine. This is some years down the track, so in practice it just doesn't happen. But my mother spotted this vine in the garden and realised immediately that it had a Cabernet leaf. Luckily, Cabernet has a leaf that's very easy to recognise. So at that point, we just left it there to watch it grow and see how close or how different it was from the existing Cabernet Sauvignon in the vineyard. And of course, we got a big surprise when it did set fruit and everything in the vineyard started turning colour, but this thing stayed white. So we knew then we at least had something a bit different, but the real fluke of this variety is that it turned out to be such a lovely wine grape, and that's something that Dad was able to appreciate, you know, right from the beginning, and that was the stimulus to continue to grow it up and graft it and make that experimental wine. And that was even more encouraging.
How long, Doran, was it before you were able to make the first experimental wine? How old was the vine at that point?
Well, the seedling occurred in 1989. And, of course, it was a couple of years later before it had its first bit of fruit. And as Anthea mentioned, I was very surprised to see it was a white grape that set well with all the physical characteristics of the Cabernet family. And as we later checked, quite closely related genetically. We kept it a big secret for many years while I grafted out into the vineyard proper. I think we got the first very small amount of wine in 1993, and even the tiny amount that I made just by hand showed the finesse of the variety, and I knew straight away this was worth persevering with. So kept grafting out in the vineyard, and each year from then on we had increasingly small amounts. And I'd made the decision to, because we were set up here in this little place after I'd left Sandalford, to produce Method Champenoise style wines. that I also put this down to method champenoise. I was well aware it was going to make a beautiful sparkling wine in its own right, particularly because of its refinement on the finish and its lovely character.
It's got gorgeous, gorgeous flavours. We were tasting it before and saying it smells like a bit like pink rose petals and really good apples and some spice. And it's got such clarity of flavour on the palate. It's the loveliest wine to drink. But you only make very small quantities of it.
That's right. We've only got the equivalent of about an acre of it here, and we do a couple of hundred cases. But, of course, we're in a position to allow others to grow it. We hold the plant breeder's rights for the grape. It was after I'd made the first several vintages that I had the variety patented with plant breeder's rights, and because of I was permitted to do the technical work myself too, because I'd had an ag science degree background, had to look up a bit of the old agricultural mathematics, but managed to do it all right. And the good thing about that was that we could keep it a secret for a bit longer. I didn't have to get a consultant to do the work for me.
You're saying to someone else, I have a secret to tell you.
Yeah, we kept it very quiet for a lot of years.
And why did you call it Signor Blanc?
Well, it is a Cabernet. Cabernet belongs to France, and it was appropriate that it had a French name. And we talked a lot about names, and it was really named Signor Blanc after the Swan Valley, the White Swan.
Yeah, so it means White Swan. Although all the swans around here, of course, are black.
Exactly.
I wanted to call it Cabernet Sauvignon Blanc. Mm. And there was a lot of discussion, I understand, at the PBR rights office in Canberra about that. And maybe the French, because they have, they have liaison with other countries.
Yes.
And I did hear the French said that was impossible to have a white Cabernet, too confusing. Well, it's not that confusing. There are three other black Cabernets, Sauvignon, Cabernet Gros, and Cabernet Franc. So I don't think it would have been too confusing. It's pretty different.
It is pretty different, but it's a much harder thing to say.
Yeah,
Cabernet Signor Blanc.
Anyway, that's what we just left it at Signor Blanc.
And every year, it's in the tradition. You were talking to me earlier, Anthea, about the family tradition of sparkling Cabernet.
Oh, yes, so it's something that goes back to the mid to late 1930s when Jack was a winemaker at Horton, and when he first started to make dry Cabernet Rosé, and appreciated then that the free-run juice of Cabernet provided him with a beautiful base wine for a sparkling style. And it's something that he made privately for decades and decades all the time he was at Horton. It was never released commercially by Horton. And Dad did the same thing all the time he was at Sandleford. From the home vineyard, he would make a small batch of this wine. And that was our family celebration wine, you know, for birthdays and Christmases and special occasions. It was only a small amount of it, but a very special wine.
Which is what you're making again.
That's right, yeah.
Small quantities of it.
My father showed me how to disgorge it when I was about 12 years old, and that used to be my job every time, which I greatly enjoyed every time there was an occasion at home.
And it's for all those who buy it, of course, it becomes a family celebratory wine. And it's released on the 1st of August every year.
When it's 2.5 years old, yes.
Is that horse's birthday?
It is.
Yeah.
It is. That's a coincidence.
But we don't have a horse steak.
There should be a horse called Signor Blanc.
Well, that would be a good name for a horse.
And so when it's sold out, that's it?
That's right.
So it takes us maybe 8 or 9 months each year to sell out, at which point we put up the clothes sign. And, of course, there are many other things happening in the vineyard during the year, so we can get on with those. And then we start disgorging perhaps a month or so before the release of the oncoming vintage, so we have some stock ready for the thirsty customers who are waiting for the new vintage.
And you disgorge by hand still?
Yes.
And you label by hand?
Yes.
So when we talk about handcrafted wines, this is one of them, one of the real ones.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a, you know, product made in the traditional way from start to finish. Hand-picked fruit, hand-disgorged and hand-labelled.
Are there any plans to extend your production?
No, I'm one of these. It's a philosophy that I've never agreed with, that if you've got something that works well and that goes well, you don't have to get bigger. Just try and make it better every time.
That's pretty special, because most people are saying, it's working so well, we can multiply this by 10 and 100. But it's interesting that you've made such a conscious decision to keep it small.
And it's what I can, with Anthea's help, can physically handle myself, you know.
So we have some help at Vintage with the picking, but apart from that, we do the rest of the process by ourselves, all the vineyard work and the winery work. We've just finished a few weeks of disbudding in the vineyard, so our next task will be giving the wines a bit of a trim in the lead-up to Christmas, and we'll bottle in January, and then it will be almost time for the next vintage in February.
Wonderful. Tell me, what for you is so special about the Swan Valley?
Oh, well, Perth has got a classically Mediterranean climatic pattern. The norm is a wet winter and a reliably dry summer. We had a couple of wet doses in the last two summers, but that's very unusual. And it didn't worry me anyway, because Cabernet Sauvignon and the white Cabernet can take rain, so it doesn't hurt the fruit. The climatic pattern of the Swan means wonderful consistency from year to year. And I think you can... when people talk about the climate of the Swan, it always reminds me of being in the background one day at Horton when Father was looking after a group of people from California, and one of them was fairly vocal, and they were tasting some wines, and he said to my father, "You know, Jack," he says, "you got some fantastic wines here, absolutely fantastic. You know, we make fantastic wines in California, some of the best in the world, you know. It's the climate in California that's the reason that we make such good wines there. Tell me, what sort of a climate does Perth have?" "Perth has got the climate that California thinks it's got."
Which is very true now, in fact, because the weather patterns in California have changed so radically. But you were saying, Anthea, that what's extraordinary about here is the consistency.
Absolutely, yeah. So we have relatively little vintage-to-vintage variation, which means we can produce wines with a lovely generosity of flavour year in, year out.
For the fundamental reason of one, the climate, and the second that I just mentioned earlier, it doesn't get hurt by rain.
Mm. Yeah.
You don't get rain damage on the fruit. So every bunch, you could eat every berry that we process.
Which is unusual.
Mm, of course. Many white varieties like Chenin Blanc and Semillon, you know, they've got a tight bunch, a bit of dose of rain in the summer just before harvest, and the berries split and the fruit can get in a mess very quickly, but it doesn't happen with Cabernet.
That's right, because the bunches are actually quite open. They're not. Mm. The berries aren't.
Well, it's the nature of the berry and the nature of the bunch and the heavy bloom on the berry of Cabernet. And the Sauvignon also has a heavy bloom.
Does it? So that really protects it.
Yeah,
from...
it looks exactly like until they start turning colour.
That's right. It's a lovely story and a lovely wine, and you still make a very dry sparkling Cabernet.
Yep, we use no expedition liqueur at all. We've always considered the base wine in our situation to have lovely natural fruit flavour. Doesn't need sweetening. We just love these as food wines.
Yep, they're gorgeous, because I tasted the other as well. And what was so delicious about it was the finesse of it, which is... Mm. A big thing in your family, finesse.
Well, Father always described, when people asked him what was a good wine should have life and flavour and refinement. And then he would amplify that a little bit, and he would always say it should be glowing with life, adorned with flavour and blessed with refinement.
Wow. And I think that's where we might leave it. Thank you very much, Doran. Thank you very much, Anthea, for speaking to us.
What a lovely couple. That was Rita Ehrlich with Doran Mann and his daughter Anthea in Perth's Swan Valley wine region.
You're listening to The Travel Writers Show on JAIR 87.8 FM.